Blog Talk Radio.
Flash it! New thing! This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. Nobody has to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't.
I'm your host, George Beverly Jr. I wish you had a great day and a great extended weekend. I hope you guys all commented or said something very nice to someone who has served, whether it's civil or military-wise. You know, we always forget those people who actually are behind the scenes. Like I posted in my Facebook page, you know, post workers, firemen, police officers, teachers, who I think are the cornerstone of America, and also the veterans, and also the VA department, Department of VA, because you know these doctors, these nurses, these social workers, case workers, mental health doctors, all these guys. Yeah, they're getting paid for helping us veterans, but they're also having to deal with us on a daily basis and all the craziness that goes on with other stuff going on in the hospitals or clinics around America. So I would also like to give a special shout out to my children who lost someone this week. So my thoughts and my prayers are with you. And so we'll do what we always do, and we can kick it started. You can find me on Facebook at Sound Out Forums. You can also find me at george.mango.904 on Facebook. You can also find me at Twitter at hashtag soundoff97413. You also can email me at soundoff97413@gmail.com. If you'd like to call in tonight, tonight's the night to call in and tell your stories about you and your service. You can call in to area code 347-989-1014. That's area code 347-989-1014. And we're going to read Ephesians 6, 6-13, the King James Version. Not with eye service as man pleases, but the service of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same he shall receive from the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same thing unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there any respect of the persons with them. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day, and having all done to stand, and let the church say, Amen. So, what I would like to do is kick it up a couple notches and talk about my experience in the military. Just maybe one or two stories, and then I'll get to this list. This list, to me, is very important. So if you just hang in there, we'll get to everything that we need. And like I said, if you'd like to call in and give us your two cents about your civil service or your service anywhere, just please call in area code 347-989-1014. So I remember I was a private. I first flew in to Fort Sill. And I got on a bus, and I went to I got to the In-N-Out processing. Got there, and, you know, we did all the regular stuff. You had to do your 10 push-ups and your 10 sit-ups, and if you couldn't pass it, then you got, you know, then you got recycled because you had to do it. And I remember us getting a voucher to go to the little shopette over there, so we get, you know, soap and deodorant and toothbrushes and stuff like that, and also we could buy running shoes. So, you know, that for me, that was so exciting. You know, I had money, and I was 18 years old, first time I left my house, and, you know, I'm getting my own money. Of course, I worked before that, but it was a little different because I was away from home. And because I've always been the man of the house, I guess you could say. I've always considered myself to be a man before my age, just be a little wiser and a little bit more mature. So we get our stuff and everything, and everything's good, and I got my little bag, and we're going. We go back to the barracks, and then the next day, we get shipped out to actual base of training because, you know, it's zero day, actually. So we get the cattle. This is real. A cattle truck pulls up, and they pile us in. Now, remember, this is an actual cattle truck where they put cows and stuff in, you know? So we get in there. We're packed in there with our gear and all that stuff. And we go on this windy trail. We finally get out. The drill sergeants jump in. They jump in, and they go crazy. They go start going berserk. They start, you know, screaming and howling at us, and then they had other drill sergeants that were lined up, and they were just you know, talking all kinds of, they're just screaming at us, you know, get out of here, poverty, blah, 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 blah. And I remember saying to myself, is this what it's about? Because I'm not really scared of these drill sergeants. I'm used to my football coaches screaming at me, grabbing my helmet, shaking my helmet, spitting at me. So, you know, for them to intimidate me by screaming at me was not a big deal. So I, you know, at that point, I was 130 pounds dripping wet. So anyway, so I'm carrying my bags. We drop our bags. People falling over the bags. They tell us to run and line up in formation. And so we get this big, huge formation. And they start telling us, to calling our names out. And, and they start putting us in different different platoons. So so they said, okay, they finished the roll call and everything, make sure everybody's got their dog tags and all that stuff. So we all got our bags and we all went upstairs to put our things away. So in order to give us our first initiation as being soldiers of the military, they said that we're going to the beach. I got freaked out. First of all, I can't swim. Second of all, I had contacts. So when I, so when they told me, hey, get ready to go to the beach, I said, well, listen, I need to do something because, first of all, I can't swim, nor do, you know, I got contacts in. I'm scared. So they said, well, just take your, they said, well, just take your contacts out. I was like, okay, well, fine. I took my contacts out, put in my little case, and then I was good to go. So I hurry up back down to formation. And we start marching, and I didn't notice any, you know, I didn't hear any water, I didn't hear any waves or anything. It's like, hey, is it Oklahoma sandlocked? You know, there's no water here, right? Anyway, so we march down, and we end up going to a huge football field length sand pit. And in this sand pit, they had sandbags all around it, and they smoked us to high heavens. I mean, we was out there for a good 45 minutes to an hour. Then what they wanted to do is teach us how to hydrate. So everybody had one canteen of water. It was full of water. You had, after they dusted us off for this hour, they made us drink a canteen full of water. There was no stopping. They said, continue, open up your mouth, flip back your head, and drink all this water. So I'm guzzling all this water. I mean, I have guys next to me puking. I mean, literally, because they couldn't drink all the water. And it was, that was one of the memories that I would never forget about the military. That was, that, I'm telling you, that day was very rememberable. I thought it was I thought it was one of the best days of my life because it, the way that they introduced us into the military, and they made us support one another. So for me, that was, you know, I mean, that was great, a great moment. Let's see, another great moment is when I first got to Fort Riley, Kansas. When I, that was my first duty station after basic training. And I get there because I had no idea what Junction City was, nor did I know where Manhattan was. I was like, I'm supposed to be going to Manhattan, Kansas, not Manhattan, you know, in New York. And I didn't know there was a Manhattan, Kansas. So anyway, so I fly in, I get there, I get organized, and they set me up in the barracks because I got there on the week, on that Sunday, and we're sitting there, and it started to snow. Now, I'm a little country boy from Louisiana, and I've never seen snow, not real snow anyway, and when I saw the snow, oh my goodness, I was so excited. I saw the, I mean, everything was blanketed. It was about a good foot of snow on the ground. I was so excited. I'm playing in the snow. We're throwing snowballs, blah, blah, blah. So the next morning, we get up for formation and stuff like that. And, you know, we do our little PT and stuff. And I was like, okay. But then, brothers and sisters, this is where it got crazy for me. They said that we needed to shovel the parking lot. Oh, my God. I was so cold. Now, this, mind you, it's the Army, so they give you the old field jacket, and the old pow cap that you put on, and some messed up black gloves that everybody gets serviced in, and these boots, right? And these boots are leather, so they're not giving you, like, you know, comfort. So it was awesome. I mean, it was awesome the fact that I was in the snow, but it was awesome where I saw the part where I had to dig the snow. Man, from that point on, I stopped doing snow. I just stopped. There was, you know, it was craziness, you know. For those people who are coming into the chat room, if you like to chat or say something, you need to register. You can do a false name, or you can register with Facebook or Twitter or whatnot, but you can't participate in the chat unless you do that. So if you'd like to say something or make or put comments in the room and you want me to read them, then please log in, sign in and log in. You don't have to keep it if you don't want, but that's their rules, not mine. I'm sorry. Another great memory I have, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a great memory because it's one of those memories where I was just so upset. We had to pull pack on the day of my birthday, and I was so upset because, you know, I'm a young kid coming in thinking, you know, we work from 9 to 5, that's it, you know. So, you know, my sergeant said, well, it's going to be a long night, y'all, you know, and, man, sergeant backed out on my butt so bad. Oh, man, he did. Oh, man, he was actually my first chief. And I'm telling you, he was the best chief I've ever had. But anyway, so we're pulling pack, and I'm up here pouting, upset, just frustrated because it was my birthday. My wife had planned dinner. My ex-wife had planned dinner. We was going to do some stuff and whatever. You know, I was just ready to have fun. And then we pulled pack, and then we ordered pizza, and I'm like, oh, man, you know. So eventually, you know, Sergeant Bash let me go, you know, and I felt bad because, you know, I didn't want to leave the section, but still, you know, I mean, I didn't want to let my ex-wife down because she had all this stuff planned and stuff, and, you know, whatever. So at that point, that was another good moment that we had. I guess I'm going to go through my whole career, huh? And then we went to NTC. When we went to NTC, I'm telling you, I had so much fun. I was on the ammo team at that time. And I was on the 277? The ammo carrier, that junk was all, it was all messed up before. It was like a little track with a little cabin, and then you had your stuff in the back. And, man, I tell you, I used to hate that little thing, but I used to, you know, drive it. But anyway, we shot a 50-round calibration mission in a mountain. That junk, I mean, I didn't last not even 10 rounds. It was tiring, man. You know, like I said, I weighed 120 pounds soaking wet. So, you know, doing those calibrations was tearing me up. Also, we shot 3 copperheads. Out of those 3 copperheads, 2 hit and 1 missed a target. But I tell you what, we were the only gun to do that. Because, you know, of course, Sergeant Bass was in Top Gun. I was always in a Top Gun section for some reason. But at that time, I wasn't no good as a soldier, no way. I'm just telling you the truth. So, I tell you what, I got to load those, you know, things. But Chief did all the clock stuff on the copperhead. Now, for those people who don't know what a copperhead, I failed to tell you, I was field artillery in Alpha 15, Fort Riley, Kansas, Hamilton Zone, first Infantry Division. So the copperhead. It was a laser guided missile back in those times. It was a laser guided round. We shot charge eight redback. Super 8 red bag with that, and that was the first time I ever seen a Super 8 red bag, but we shot the hell out of those things, man. And I tell you what, it was just so much fun, me being able to load 3 copperheads, and of course they phased them out that type of copperhead anyway. But I tell you what, it was so much fun to do those things and to be able to be, you know, sit here today and say, hey, I shot a live copperhead round with my section. You know, to me that was a good thing as a private. Then I went to Korea. Had some good moments in Korea. I'm still friends with one of my good friends, Lawrence. It's Thomas Lawrence now. Thomas Lawrence just got out of the military last month. Bless him. And he moved to Oklahoma City, so we need to get back together. So anyway, but we met in Korea and we had some fun times there. I'm not going to tell you my horror stories on Hooker Hill. I'm not going to do that just yet. But let's see. I went back to Kansas, Fort Riley, and I was in Alpha 217. Excuse me. Four one. That's right. I was in Alpha Battery 401, and my homeboy Rodriguez and Walt was in Korea with me, but my homeboy Rodriguez was there and he was there and stuff. And then I ended up going to Germany. I was only there for like 6 months, and then I left to go to Germany. I spent 7 years in Germany, and I tell you, those were the best years of my life. I met some awesome officers. I met some awesome NCOs. I met Sergeant Major Kimwella, wherever he is. He was my first Sergeant Major, DeVardi Sergeant Major. I tell you what, he looked like General Sasaki. Actually, General Sasaki was our general for 1st Armored Division when I first got there. But General Sasaki, Sergeant Major Kimwella was not only a bulldog, but he was a real Sergeant Major. Now, I've had a lot of Sergeant Majors in my time, and I tell you, I respected him a lot, and I still remember the things that he taught me and he told me. I had a great first sergeant. My very first female first sergeant, Sergeant Major Prey, she's Sergeant Major now. She redefined the female role as a female soldier. And Sergeant Major Prey was, not only was she skillful as an S1, but she was also craftful at organizing her soldiers to do things that were self-fulfilling, if you understand that. I don't know if I'm saying this right. She would have us do a mission, but not only would she have us do the mission, but the mission within itself created development in the mission. So I really respected her for that. And like I said, she redefined to me, should women, because I was in DeVardi at that time, she redefined to me of women in the military. I've always been, you know, one who always thought that, you know, females shouldn't be in the military and stuff like that. But it was, you know, I was a young person. I didn't know different things. And listen, women can do just as much as men given the opportunity. So, like I said, those people, just to name a few, and I'm telling you, I had some First Sergeant Webb when I was in Korea. He had a twin brother. His name was Donald Webb. I'd say he was very proficient as a first sergeant. Great guy. Anyway, so I spent 7 years in Germany. I have to say the support system in Baumholder is top notch. When I lived there for those 7 years, the base commander, Lieutenant Colonel Larson, and Sergeant Major Daniels, top notch people. I think Sergeant Major's still in Germany. Just top notch people. I mean, there's so many names that I want to say, but during my career, there were so many top notch, professional, loving, caring, NCOs and officers. And you can't really say that. I can't really say that about the masses of the military, but the people that God put in my path was awesome. My I would say my last But my last two commanding groups, which was First Sergeant Jarvis and Major Hickman and Sergeant Major Poindexter, when I went to Iraq, I mean, I cannot be blessed enough to be serve under these gentlemen. I just can't say enough about these gentlemen. And I've known Sergeant Major Poindexter for a longer time because he was in Divari when I was in Divari. And, I mean, just top-notch guys. And then First Sergeant Jarvis and then Captain Gerber. Listen, under these four gentlemen, my tutelage as an NCO, they had given me so much knowledge and an area of development. I think if you're going to be a good NCO, you need strong leaders, senior leaders, not to necessarily baby you, but to give you enough room for you to hang yourself, draw you back in and say, listen, these are the things you could have done better. And I tell you what, learning that lesson from when I was in Charlie Battery, when I got to First Sergeant Jarvis and Captain Gerber, I hope I was impressive enough to have continued that legacy that, you know, the Charlie Battery Command had given me. And I tell you what, the last 2 years in Bomb Holder were very difficult for me, but also very as far as career wise and maturity as an NCO, it was great. It was one of those things where I was able to use the positive and the negative things to mentor and tutor younger soldiers that were coming in onward attachment. Now, when I left Germany, my last duty station was at Fort Sill. I was AIT instructor. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and BS you like I was the best thing since sliced bread. That is far from the truth. I was an NCO who was a middle of the road. That's just how I am, really. Some people may thought I was above that, and some people may have thought I was a dirtbag, whether that was my soldiers or whether it was my superiors. Either way, you know, it's too late for that. I always had the philosophy where I wanted to give my soldiers the benefit of the doubt and also make them better than what they was. The same tutelage that I got when I was being brought up through the ranks, I wanted to give them the same opportunity. Now, whether my soldiers felt that I was that NCO or not, that's here nor there, because when they make their stripes, they've got to do what they need to do. So I get to Fort Sill, and I did things that I didn't thought I was able to do. I got there as an AIT instructor. I knew how to run the paladin, and I shot a couple rounds. But I did something that, for me, was just, stepping out of my comfort zone. My smoke at the time, I forgot his name. He was another good smoke. I mean, he was just great. He was just great. I forgot his name. But he asked the chief, you know, who was willing to take on another gun because there was, you know, the person who was shooting that gun was leaving. I said, you know what, I'll do it, you know. And so I had to learn how to do it. I did right seat ride and stuff and went into the manual right off my head. But I went in there and I learned it. And I shot the 1.98. I tell you what, being on the 1.98 gave me a newfound love for artillery. I didn't want to do the 1.94. The little pea gun. When I shot that 1.98, it was just a different feeling of artillery. It was an empowerment. I don't know. It was just being on the ground, getting your soldiers motivated to shoot as fast as we can possibly can against the mobilized 1.98. I mean, excuse me, 109, the 109 Alpha Deuce, you know, to outshoot them at times is a was a good thing for me. It was fun, and it also helped me get more better close to my soldiers that I was mentoring as AIT went through, and gave them a piece of an idea of what it felt like to be a chief. And when, for me, it was like when I was in the Paladin, it was like I was kind of lazy. You know what I mean? I just sat in the seat and pressed a couple of buttons. And here I was, you know, interacting with them, doing this, boom, 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 boom. And for the first time in my military career, I know y'all probably saying, well, damn, it took that long for you to get that for the first time in my career, I felt really comfortable being a chief. It was awesome. I tell you what, I really missed those moments. I missed the moments of PT when we call cadence and do that. I've always been a good cadence caller, but it was just the idea of just, you know, the morale and getting soldiers motivated because they love the way you called your cadence. And, there's a lot of people that I still remember. There's a lot of people that I don't remember. And if I don't remember you, I apologize. Doesn't mean that you didn't make an impact in my life. It's just not there. But there are a lot of people that I see constantly now that I live in Wichita Falls. And when I go to Fort Sill, and I see them. So it's one of those things where, you know, I'm never far from. And actually, I live by Air Force Base, so I'm not far from soldiers and soldiering. So, you know, tonight's about service, and you know, there's good times and there's bad times, but I'd rather tonight be a time of remembrance of good times and the goodness of the military and what we serve. Let's see. I'm going to try to think about the best. I'm trying to think of a speech that I heard was the best speech that I've ever heard during my military career. Let's see. I would have to say Sergeant Major Dixon. Denson. Sergeant Major Denson. Sergeant Major DeVardy. He was a Sergeant Major with Colonel Williams, which was another great colonel. Great colonel. Sergeant Major Denson, when we came back from Iraq, he gave this speech at that time he was the 427. He was the 427 Sergeant Major at the time when we came back. And he gave an awesome speech when we came back. So I don't quite remember, but I remember him saying something to the effect about what we've seen, what we've done. We should be proud, but we need to continue to rebuild, be with our families, take control of our situations, and be able to move forward. So when we're called upon again, we'll be able to be the best that we possibly were. And like I said, I remember everything of the speech, but I really appreciated it because he was a good NCO, and not only was a good senior NCO, but he was also he mentored me in a way that on my decision of where I wanted to take my career. And I really appreciated that from him. And I'm not going to sit here and name drop and all that stuff, but I'm sure everybody has got their moments and their memories, and of everything. And I would like to recognize my fallen brothers who have fallen through all the services and bless them and their families. I do want to say this about the Army families. Excuse me, I'll just say the armed services families. They are such an important entity of the military that we take for granted. And we leave husbands and wives and children and other loved ones back home with the thought that we will return. And sometimes we return in bits and pieces, physically and mentally. But I want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you, the children, thank you for all things that you do, because it's very important that they get recognized. There's so many different things that are going on that you may not understand, but we really need to tell them thank you and we love you. We have to say these things to our armed service families, their children, the uncles, the aunties, the grandmothers. They need to know that they are loved by us, because they support us in ways we don't even know. So from one veteran and one service member to the people out there who are listening, thank you very much. I know we're not the same when we get out. I know we're not the same when we go to war, and I know we're not the same when we get out of the service, but I'd like to thank you, okay? Thank you from the bottom of my heart, and God bless you. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will push ahead. And this right here is, I got this from the VA clinic on Fort Sill. In Lawton, VA clinic, the vet center. And it says, 10 things that your combat vet wants you to know. Concerns might share to psychiatrists by combat vets. Now, you may agree or you may disagree with these things that I'm going to read. This is not my pamphlet. This is not my 10 things list. This is coming from a VA institution, so if you got comments, write the VA, or you can write me and tell me, that's not how you feel. But like I said, it's coming from them. So if you like to call in, the number to call in is 347-989-1014. That's area code 347-989-1014. Number one, he is addicted to war. Although he loves you, war is horrible, but there is nothing like a life and death fight to make you feel truly alive. The adrenaline rush is tremendous and could never be replaced. Succeeding in combat defines a warrior. Place him in a brotherhood where he will always welcome and understand. Number two, living for you is hard. It would be easy for him to die for you because he loves you. Living for you, which is what you actually want, is harder for him. It's even harder for him if he is not smart and does not need him to rescue you. Since rescuing is something he does very well, if you are very competent at many things, he may be at the time question if he needs him at all. He may not see that you stay with him as a conscious choice. Basically, they were saying that if your loved one feels like they ask you a question when you die from it and they say no, it's because the soldier wants to rescue you, because he finds him and his ability to rescue more valuable than dying, because he's good at rescuing. Number three, the training kicks in means something very different to him. It is different. It is a direct battle doctrine that would ambush by a superior force. The correct response is apply maximum firepower and break contact. A warrior has to be able to respond to threats in the minimal time, pondering choices. While he is living in combat, it is not helpful in the most slower paced civilian world. When training becomes second nature, a warrior must take any adrenaline use as a cue of applying maximum firepower. This can become particularly unfortunate if someone starts to cry. Tears are unbearable to him. They create explosive emotions in him that can be difficult to control. Unfortunately, that can lead to a warrior responding to strong waves of guilt by applying even the most maximum fire on friends, family, and unfortunately, the strangers. Number four, he is afraid to get attached to anyone because of his learning that people you love get killed and he can't face the pain again. He may make a few exceptions for his children because they cannot divorce him, but that will be institutionalized and he will probably not be able to explain his actions. Number five, he knows that the military exists for a reason. The sad fact is that the military existence, unfortunately, to kill people and to break things. This was true of our beloved great generation warriors of World War II, and it remains true today. Technically, your warriors may well be killers as well as his friends. He may have a hard time seeing that this does not make him a murderer. Although they may look similar at first glance, he is sheepdog protected by the herd, not a wolf trying to destroy it. The emotional side of killing in combat is complex. He may not know how to feel about what he's seen or done, and he may not accept his feelings to change over time. Warriors can experience moments of profound guilt, shame, and self-hatred. He may have examples of monumental evaluate at scoring one or a good guy, scoring one for the good guy, then be horrified that he celebrates killing a human being. He may view himself as a monster for having those emotions or for having gotten used to killing because it happened often. Number six, he has to be cultivate explosive anger in order to survive in combat. Number seven, he may have been only 19 when he first had to make life and death decisions for someone else. What kind of skills do a 19-year-old have to deal with that kinds of responsibility? A veteran put it this way: you want to know what frightening is? It's a 19-year-old boy who has a sip of the powder over life and death, and the war gives it to you. It is a boy who, despite all the things has been taught, knows that he likes it. It is a 19-year-old boy who just lost a friend and is angry and scared and determined that someone is going to pay. This is the day that thought of that boy could wake me from a silent sleep and leave me staring at the ceiling. Number eight, he may believe he is the only one who feels this way. Eventually, he may realize that at least other combat vets understand. On some level, he doesn't want you to understand because that would mean you share his horrible experience and he wants you to remain innocent. Number nine, he doesn't understand that you have a mother bear inside of you that probably only one of us used to kill in defense for someone if we needed to. Imagine your reaction if someone pointed a gun, a weapon, at your child. Would you change your reaction for your children's pointing a weapon at your child? And number 10, when you don't understand, he needs you to give him the benefit of the doubt. He needs you to always realize that his issues are about you, aren't about you, although you may step into them sometimes. Truly, the last thing he wants is to become a casualty of war. And so those are the 10 things that have been used or brought up. And I just wanted to share those things with you on this Memorial Day. It's been a real tough day for me, ladies and gentlemen. But I want you to know that that I care for you and I love for you to be strong and love everyone as much as possible. If you can't, it's understandable, but listen, it is about humanity. It is about one another. You know, we have to forget racism, classism, all the isms that keeps us being together, because, you know, together we stand, divided we fall. And so that is the analogy we must use in what we know to be America, to be a great nation. We have to continue to be strong for our children so this nation continue to run as a strong nation and be loved. My name is George Beverly. This is Sound Off Forums, and I bid you a good night.